This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I am Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we'll chat with those in and around our community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly, they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. This man was born in Perth, and while you would know him as a household name for being a judge on Dancing with the Stars, it was his passion as a dancer and a singer that propelled him to stardom. His back catalogue of work is super impressive, featuring in the creme de la creme of musicals such as South Pacific, Priscilla Queen of the Desert, and Singing in the Rain, just to name a few. But it was winning the pivotal role as Peter Allen in The Boy from Oz that saw him tour the country and appear on pretty much every talk show in the biz. This man's so talented, it kind of makes me sick, even appearing in Mr. Baz Luhrmann's Strictly Ballroom. However, it's his current turn with the Rocky Horror Picture Show that has the nation talking. I'd like to welcome you, and I'd like to welcome Todd McKinney to Word for Word.
My childhood was about dance. My mum was a dancing teacher. I never remember mum and dad having an argument of any sort. I just got up one morning and dad was gone. I'm competitive with myself, so I always want to win. I've always just run my own race, and that's sort of my mantra through life.
Look, I think I speak not only on my own behalf, but anyone who's ever done this show. Todd's a bitch.
Well, I'm just glad you didn't stuff that one up.
To celebrate 20 years of Todd McKinney performing Peter Allen's songs, here he is with Tenterfield Sadler.
When time is a traveller, Tenterfield Sadler, turn your head.
Todd McKinney has been on the road these past few days. All across the country, he's been taking his new show, What a Life. He's singing songs about the artists who shaped his life. He's sharing embarrassing stories. They're the ones we love the most. He joins us now. Todd, hi.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Should I be upset that you're not actually dressed as Frankenfurter right now?
No. My hands are.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well, I had my nails redone today, so.
How often do they redo your nails?
Every 2 weeks. Hollywood Nails doing that, and they just giggle at me the whole time. But it's really weird because it's not the girls who do the nails.
Mm.
They understand it fine. Like, they didn't flinch, but they just had a bit of a giggle. But it's the other women, the other ladies sitting in the along from me. You can tell that they're freaking out. They're freaking out because I'm getting my nails done.
Have you been in with your mum?
No, I've been in with my daughter. Yeah, yeah, we both got our nails.
That is the cutest thing I've ever
heard. She was horrified because I got green put on my toenails.
So you're in Melbourne for Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I should say.
We are.
Are you having the time of your life playing this role?
Yeah, it's great.
Watching the show, you gave me the feels of one of the girls from the Golden Girls for some reason.
Yes, I know. A lot of people have said that. And when you look at me and B. Arthur next to each other, we do look a bit the same. The wig's not wasn't quite right. We've got the wig a bit.
You've got it a little bit more.
I wanted it to actually look like hair, not like some sort of sprayed helmet. And we kind of opened the show with me looking like a helmet.
Well, look, we're going to get into some of that a little bit later on. But you grew up in Perth. What would you say your childhood was like?
My childhood was about dance. My mum was a dancing teacher. My grandmother was a dancing teacher. So we come from a long line of dancing teachers. My father, when I was very, very first growing up, as a baby, was a car salesman. He worked in finance and at a car yard. But then when I can sort of start to remember my childhood, my father was a jail warden. So he worked, first of all, at Fremantle Jail, as a screw, as they call them. And then he moved to the Canning Vale Remand Centre and recently retired a few years ago. my mum and dad split up when I was 9, and so I didn't have much to do with him. And I can only imagine that when my sort of celebrity sort of appeared, you know, with the boy from I Was Dancing with the Stars and me frou-frouing around in feathers and sequins, that the prison life must have been quite difficult for my father.
The poor man. But you know what? I think you're sitting on a gold mine here, because if we put together The Prison Warden with the screws and the dancing with your mum, Wentworth the musical.
Totally.
Oh, Prisoner the Musical.
Yeah, no, totally.
Todd Have you pitched this
Todd
before?
Todd the Musical.
Oh, come on. We've got to put your name into it. Yeah, 100%. Now, what would you say your relationship was like with your parents?
With my dad, I can only remember the good times. So, so he left when I was 9, as I said. But all I can remember with him is going to the footy, wrestling on the lounge room floor, swimming in the ocean, going to friends' farms. And I can only remember those good times. I never remember mum and dad having an argument of any sort. I just got up one morning and dad was gone. So I wasn't aware of why at that point. So I'm kind of grateful that whatever they were going through was hidden from us.
Wow.
And I never missed him. It never occurred to me. I was so happy with mum and dancing, and which was her side of my childhood. I'd never missed him. And I've seen him from time to time, but decades go by between me seeing him. Like, he turned up at 42nd Street. I was doing a musical in Perth. He turned up at the bar and after the show, and I was like, oh, hi. And he's got a new wife, and I went out and had supper with him afterwards. But I just had no animosity. I think you just get love wherever you can get it. It was just so natural that it just felt right. I don't know. I didn't have any animosity. I would have much preferred that they took the road they took by separating and him just taking off than staying together for the kids. I didn't have any of that. And I didn't care. And I've told my dad that when he turned up at the boy from Oz in Perth, I said, look, I don't know, you know, what you went through, but I have absolutely no problems with it. The thing I do think, which is a bit weird now, is that I've got a daughter who's 11. And I could no more think of walking out on her than flying in the air. I don't know how he did it. It could have been the fact that he was watching this little gay boy grow up back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Not knowing how to deal with that and seeing that I was clearly going to be a dancer, you know, he was loving it. And maybe he didn't cope with that. Maybe he went, I'm out of here. I don't know.
Were you an only child?
No, my sister's 11 months older than me. So
what's your relationship then like with her?
Well, she married my ex-boyfriend.
Oh, my God. Get out.
No, she did. Yeah, so that we have a weird relationship. Yeah. So
she married your...
So she married my ex-boyfriend and is still married to my ex-boyfriend, but just has never mentioned it to me. It's weird, isn't it? I don't think I've ever spoken about it publicly. So Simon Gallagher, big theatrical producer, I went out with. Yeah. So we did Pirates of Penzance together. And your face is... your jaw is dropped.
I know. Pick
that up.
I know all these people. So I'm just like, I don't know them personally. Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, this is more for the movies. Yeah. Todd the musical. So I went out with Simon for...
For how long?
5 years.
Get out!
It wasn't a weekend fling at the drive-ins. So then, but we split up. I went on with my life and he went on with his. And then my sister, who had been working in Japan at the time, in a what we call Tits and Feathers show, you know, cabaret show, came back. And I remember I was doing Cats here at Her Majesty's Theatre one day, and there was a newspaper banner outside the news agency that used to be next to the Madge. And it said Simon's love child, and I didn't know anything about that, but I got into my dressing room to get ready for Cats, and the other guys in the show said, what about Simon and Lisa? And I went, which Simon? And they're like, Simon Gallagher. I said, Lisa who? They went, your sister. I went, what? I didn't even know they knew each other. They got married. They've got 3 kids, and I'm close to their kids. Yeah. But again, this is my philosophy. Go for it.
Look what the cat dragged in.
Go for it. You know, if you're happy, go for it.
What's the dynamic like in your family growing up with your sister?
But we were never close anyway, my sister and I. Like, so, and I don't know why. We're just talking cheese. We're just two different.
There must be some similarities. Completely. I mean, what's his name's thinking? The two of you are pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to go down that road. I've heard it all, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I'm sick of not talking about it. You're like, because it's a really rich part of my life, you know. But Lisa, her name is, and we were just never close. We were in the same family, but cut from a completely different cloth. And again, I don't care. That's just what happened in my life. You know, everyone, you scratch the surface of anybody's life and there's a story. I'm a firm believer in that.
No, we just managed to get a really good story out of that scratch. That was a very small scratch to a very big story.
I'll be reading about this everywhere now.
I don't care. Wow. But what dynamic did you play in your family? Like, as in within your mother, I guess, and your sister in that family role?
Well, I think this is probably another reason why Lisa and I probably didn't necessarily gel. Part of our world in the dancing world was a competition.
Yeah, right.
And a Stedford. Uh-huh. And I think when you've got two kids and you pit one up against the other in an arena, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for siblings. Mm-hmm. When you've got one against the other, we're only 11 months apart, always in the same age group. I'm a male dancer in that world, and which is always going to stick out more than one of 45 girls in the same category. Do you know what I mean? So I always tended to do better. Not always, but mostly. And I don't think that's healthy for siblings. And I if my daughter had a sister, I don't think I'd put them in one-on-one competition. I think I'd do the team sports thing, or I don't think I'd pit them against each other. But that's, we see each other, you know, from time to time, but we don't ring each other. But you know, if there's a family event, there's no knives, there's no animosity, there's no. I just think people.
Todd, I just am going to keep thinking about this for days.
I know. You are. And once this goes to air, everyone will be thinking
about
it.
Everyone is going
to
be thinking about it.
I'm giving you a scoop.
Well, thank you very much for that. I'm going to take it.
Well, the reason I haven't spoken about it all these years, because I've been approached by a couple of company organisations to do a book twice now.
Okay.
And I've started twice. And I get to this point of the story with Ghost Rider, or telling it, and then I think, you know what, the kids aren't old enough to deal with the truth. I don't know what they know. Mm. And so for the sake of them, I haven't said it, but you know, they're growing up now, and I get on with them, and they know what the story is, really. And so I think it's time. That's just part of my life, and it's a colourful part, and it's part of the rich fabric that makes me tick.
When you were growing up, when did you start getting into tap and musicals? Because your mum was a dance teacher, so was it like at 3 or 4 from the start?
I think three. Yeah, so we were just at the back of the studio doing our homework or our whatever. It was school from, and we lived over the road from school, so school would be get up at 8 and be at school by 8:30. Mum would drive by at 3:30, pick us up, take us to the dance studio, and we'd stay there until 10 o'clock at night and do jazz and tap and ballet and stuff for the first part of the day. And then I'd go up the driveway to the ballroom studio and do ballroom until 10 o'clock. And so it was just, that's what it was. And then on the weekends was the Stedfords, and so that was my life. So I never went on school camps. I never had school friends. All my friends were dancing friends. It's just part of my life. I've tried other things. I was a competitive springboard diver for a while, and Mum never forced me into it. I just really loved to do it. And Mum's school had a lot of boys in the class. Like, because of me, it sort of encouraged other guys to sort of join. So it was a good environment to learn to be a male dancer.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I never had to dance. I wasn't just one boy in the school in amongst 50 girls, and then you come out dancing very effeminately. I was with other boys, and so that's sort of put me in good stead when I started to audition for things, because in shows, you know, no one cares in the musical theatre business what your sexual orientation is, but as long as a guy, when you're partnering a girl in Oklahoma,
it's believable.
It's got to be believable.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you've got to lie about your sexuality, but it has to be believable for a storytelling point of view. And because of my upbringing in the dance studio that Mum had with all those guys, it put me in good stead to get the male roles, mate.
As you were growing up, what would you say you were like as a child? What was Todd like?
Well, I'm competitive with myself, so I always want to win. Like, or when I say win, I want to be, you know, if somebody could do 3 pirouettes, I wanted to do 10. If someone wanted, you know, wanted to tap dance, I wanted to tap dance down the front, not at the back. So I was extroverted as a kid in everything, in athletics at school, in, you know, football, in everything. I wanted to stand out.
You wanted to kill it.
I wanted to be noticed. I never wanted to blend in. But my sister, see, on the other hand, she's the complete opposite. She just wanted to be one of the pack and kind of be up the back. And so that's why I say we're chalk and cheese. We're just somehow different kids.
Yeah, but I think that's obvious then in where you've gone in your lives. I mean, you've ended up being quite a sensational performer, and she probably is quite talented, but she's kind of in the back.
Yeah, and she's still in a theatrical family and still in that world, and a great mother, and, you know, and she's had her life. And this is the other thing too. I've always run my own race. I've never longed for anybody else's career. I've never longed for anybody else's talent. I've always just run my own race, and that's sort of my mantra through life. I wish you success. I wish the person next to me success. I wish everybody success, as long as they're happy. I never envious of anybody else.
I think it's a really good mantra to have. Mm. And in particular, I think in the industry and to stay in the industry, the ones that do champion other people seem to stay the longest.
And it's hard because not everybody gets the breaks. Look, I've had luck. I mean, I've been in the right place at the right time with the right goods, which has just, it's given me an incredibly diverse career. And
were you popular in school?
No. So I went to Tuart Hill Senior High School, which was very middle class. Mm-hmm. And no one accepted the fact that I danced. They hated it. And I got bullied a lot. God, we didn't call it bullying back then, but I'd come home in tears often. Mm. But then I started to represent Western Australia in the National Ballroom Dancing Championships. So I'd be missing from school 10 times a year over the weekends from Friday to Monday. And once kids cottoned on to where I was and why I wasn't there, and I was travelling on a plane, because back then, you know, we didn't catch planes like buses like we do now.
Yeah.
That kind of upped my
My
street cred at Tuart Hill Senior High School was kind of, oh, it wasn't too bad because I was travelling and they were all stuck at school. And so that sort of changed things a little bit.
It gave you a bit of an edge.
Gave me a bit of an edge, yeah.
Mm. What age was it that you then started to think, I like boys?
Oh, 16. Probably 16.
And then what was your first, not experience as a gay man, but like what was your first knowledge that there were gay people?
Some of the ballroom teachers, I think.
Were a bit friendly with each other?
No, just a bit flamboyant.
Okay. You're like, what's going on with those
racy
guys?
Mm. So, you know, one was a florist, one was a hairdresser. Yeah, cliched. And literally they were, and then did ballroom dancing and covered in sequins and spray tan on the weekends. But, I don't know. I didn't necessarily have a moment. I knew that I was attracted to one guy. Before I left, this is my lovely mum, you see. This is before I left. I'd been seeing this guy, and it was in 1983, and I was coming to move to Sydney to do a musical, first time away from home, all that. And I'd been friendly with this guy and dating, really. Anyway, I was the 3 weeks before we left, I thought I was getting away with it and just, I'll, you know, come out when I leave home, you know, all that. And then my mum came to me randomly one night and said, Todd, would you like Mark to come and stay before you go away? And I was like, oh, yes.
At the family home?
Not only at the family home, she moved upstairs into my single bed and gave him and I the double bed.
What?
The marital bed. See, I'm the gift that keeps on giving for you, aren't I? But this is how cool my mum is.
This radio interview is not going to be as good because people can't see how much I'm laughing to the point of tears when you tell me these things.
This is the honesty I'm telling you about. Well, it's live. This is what happened.
So hang on.
But how amazing is that?
I love the child.
To have a mum that says, when you think you're getting away with this little thing on the side, she goes, why doesn't Mark move? Get your head off the desk. Why doesn't Mark move in? And you know what? What a gift. So I never had to come out to my mum. I never had to have the chat. That's just how my life, and I'm so grateful for that because I've got friends who did have to have the chat. I've got friends who's, when they had the chat, their father doesn't speak to them anymore. I've got friends like that, and I just am so grateful. I just never had to go through that.
Did she talk about what age she must have thought?
No,
Todd,
we're not really that sort of family. We don't, she gets older, she's 74 now, and we talk a bit more personal stuff, but we didn't really grow up as a talky, huggy.
Only a couple of years ago, wasn't she staying up all night putting sequin diamantes all over one of your outfits?
Oh, my God, you've been stalking me on Facebook. So, Instagram. She was.
So, she'll stay up all night.
I come home one day, she was as high as a kite because she hadn't opened the windows for the glue. And I went out shopping, came back, and my mum's giggling with the ironing board in front of her, putting rhinestones, Swarovski crystals on the Hawaiian shirt from the Peter Allen show. And she's giggling her head off. And she doesn't drink or anything, my mum. And I went, Mum, what have you done? What's wrong with you? What's going wrong with you? I think this glue might be a bit strong, she said. She's putting some more Aurora crystals around my collar.
Did you, by any chance, want to say to her just to use a bedazzler where there's no glue involved?
No, you can't.
Oh, you couldn't do that?
Seriously, because I had to wash these things and look.
They need to stick.
Don't talk to me about crystallinger shirts and what's required. No,
what year is she making these costumes in these high productions that
you do? This is a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
No, she loves it. She did herself a caftan as well.
What advice would you give to Todd McKinney? if you got to speak to him at the age of 12? If he walked in right now, what would you say to him?
Don't stress. I'm a stress head.
Were you a stress head? Are you still a stress head?
Yes, I'm a stress head.
So you can just tell this to yourself now, really.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, Todd, don't stress. But now I don't, because I've now a bit more chilled out as I got older. But yeah, no, I stressed about everything. I if someone isn't having a good time, I panic about them and I lie in bed awake at night. I'm that person. You know, like if a homeless person in the street even now asks me for money, I go to the ATM. I'm one of those. I don't need to do that all the time, and I take on other people's problems and I stress about it, so I just need to chill out.
I reckon you and I have got some similarities, because that's usually for me. Like, my stress is usually coming down to the fact that I think I bleed for people. Like, if I go and sit down with someone and start living their lives, I walk away with it. I don't throw it away like other people should.
That's me. So if I do something, if something goes wrong and, you know, and in someone else's life, I take it on board. Or as a kid, I used to blame myself. I used to think it was me. But I don't know. I think I would say to my 12-year-old self that everything will be all right. Just chill out.
Well, what do you say to your 12-year-old daughter, really?
I think it's a different time we live in. I think kids are much more aware of their mental well, I think the kids that she's around, I think they're a bit more aware because of their parenting of their mental health these days. And so I think it's good to – we're aware of kids not worrying so much. Whereas I don't think – no one ever looked at me and said, oh, he's a worrier. Let's talk him down. I think they just let me – I just worried.
What would you say makes a good performer?
Truth, honesty, be yourself. That's what – I hate the most when I see a performer is if I just don't believe it. And you don't have to be the best singer in the world, for instance, but if I don't think you believe in the lyrics, but you can hit a high C above middle C, I don't care. But if you look at me in the eyes, Kylie Minogue, like I love Kylie, right? Love Kylie. But in her concerts, I just want her to stop singing and talk to us. When I see her live, I can listen to her albums, and I love her production. And all the reasons why we, the gay boys, love Kylie. We love her. But I don't know. I want her to chat to me. And that's just an example. So on stage, whether it's on radio or on television or on stage, it's honesty.
So then you dated women as well as dating men.
Mm-hmm.
So did you
Sonia Kruger was my first girlfriend at 12.
Get out.
Sonia was my first girlfriend at 12. So Sonia, and she's one of my best friends and has been for years. So Sonia was representing Queensland with her partner, and I was representing WA. So we're all the national dancing championships, and we're in the same age group because Sonia and I are the same age. We would meet up. And so her and I had this little kind of thing at 12, and we'd hold hands and kiss behind the stage and, you know, all that sort of stuff at 12 and write love letters to each other and all that. And then her and I hooked up again at 17.
No.
Yeah. And then after that, then she sort of went her way, and then I went my way again, and I, you know, found boys and just my life and me as I am. And she went off and did stuff and ended up in Strictly Ballroom. And
is that a pure coincidence?
No. Well, she got the role. She auditioned and got the role of Tina Sparkle, obviously. But I auditioned for the role that Paul Mercurio got, the lead role of Scott. Because when I auditioned for it, Baz had written it as an all-Australian kind of surfy-looking kind of tanned thing, meets up with this sort of, you know, European girl. That was the thing. But then I didn't get that. I mustn't have been any good, but I didn't get it. And Paul got it, and they sort of just changed the look of him. And then someone else got, I didn't get any other role in it. And then this guy who played the role that I played in the movie got sick on the day of the shoot, and they needed someone who could do a rumba. And Sonia said, get Toddy. And so I get a phone call from John O'Connell, the choreographer, on the day saying, can you come and do a rumba today with Sonia Kruger? So I did 4 days on the movie. And so that's when Sonia and I reconnected. And then even when Dancing with the Stars came up again, it was Sonia that said, you need to judge, you need to look at Toddy. And so Sonia and I connected again. And
she's good like that, though.
She's one of my dearest friends. She can make me laugh like nobody else. Just thinking about her. She's a good egg, Sonia, and she's intelligent and she's bright and she's glamorous with a bit of a sting in her tail. So Sonia's one of those people that if she walks into a room, you know Sonia's in the room.
Yeah.
She's one of those. But she doesn't. Sonia has this mantra, which I agree with, which is in our industry, especially for women of our age, perception is reality. So if you look like a bombshell, you look like a million bucks, you look like success, you are success. And, you know, our industry kind of does work like that, particularly for women. Like I, every day that we would do Dancing with the Stars, when we, her and I were both living in Sydney, we would catch the plane back together, and we'd often catch the plane there together, and she'd have the sunnies on, she'd have the hair up, she'd be in even a tracksuit, but she'd be rocking it. And seriously, it was like walking through the streets of Mr. Magoo. You know, cars would crash, buildings would fall down, and I'd be left picking up the bricks and the pieces and the handbag, and she would just saunter through like, you know, some Hollywood glamorous star. And I kind of like that sort of side of her. People underestimate her intelligence. She's really bright.
Very smart lady.
She's very smart, and she works on her humour. Like, her and I would work on gags on Dancing with the Stars all the time. Like, I'd get to the studio, go into her room while she's getting a bass done, and we'd go, okay, well, love, what do you got? She's got, well, I might be saying this tonight. She said, but I don't know if it's more you. And I'd say, what is it? So she'd say, here's a line. So, or I'd say, you know, I'm thinking of doing this, but I don't know if, or we'd both come up during those chats with some sort of tidbit. And then we'd look at each other if it was gold and we'd say, I'll race you for it. So throughout that show that night, we would be racing to see who could get to this line. And the reason we did that is because even though we were there to judge the dancing competition and her host backstage, we always have a little sort of backup plan next to our judging notes in case you're dry. You know, if somebody comes out, dances down the middle of the road, you've got nothing much to say, we could revert to these gags or to just a bit of prep.
I mean, you've got two people operating on a show like as big as Dancing with the Stars and the two of you have got that genuine mateship, it bleeds in, you know?
Oh, yeah. And often she would throw to me from the green room, which I couldn't see, and she'd make some kind of gay joke or something, which I loved. And, yeah, that sort of stuff. Yeah, I missed that after it. You know.
She's good at a double entendre.
She's good at a double entendre. So when Holly Brisley, you know, actress Holly Brisley was on. So this is one example. So we were, Sonia and I were in the makeup chair and we're going, okay, you love, what do you got? And I said, well, I've got this line, but I just don't know whether we can say it because, and it was, that dress was so short we nearly saw Holly's Brisley.
Right? Yeah.
But Holly kept turning up to the gig, and that was one of the ones I'll race you for it, right?
Yeah, right.
But Holly kept turning up to the show with these sort of knee-length, ankle-length gowns, and we couldn't get to this line. And, you know, each week we'd go, I'd come in and go, what's she wearing? Short enough for the gag to work. Anyway, towards the end of the season it did, and Holly's mouth dropped, and I won. But it's that sort of camaraderie that Sonia and I, we have, and Sonia and I can chew the fat for hours and dissect every little bit of our performances and, you know, the reaction and people's dances, and I love that because I quite like doing that too, so... We would do that every week.
Dancing with the Stars is coming back. Were you going to do it? Channel 10?
I don't know.
You haven't received that phone call yet?
I haven't received that phone call yet.
But if they ring you and say, do you want to do it?
Well, without weakening my negotiating skills, if that phone call does happen, I'd certainly think about it.
I'll read behind the lines there.
It's just such a great format.
Mm.
It's friendly, it's sparkly, it's people have to actually try to succeed, which I think is a good part of the show. And... I loved every episode of it, and I never got bored with it. It was the least amount of prep, really, I could do for anything. Mm. You know, when I do shows, I've got to rehearse with the band and you know, learn choreography, learn songs, learn scripts, da-da-da. For that, I couldn't. I just had to turn up on the night. And I loved every single – I never got sick of it. We did 16 series, 12 years. I loved every one of it. So if Channel 10 did ring, yeah, there'd be no reason for me to say no, but – then if I put my producer's hat on and I was Channel 10, I could certainly see the value in polishing it up, rebooting it, tipping out the old and in with the new, and I'd still support it for them, you know.
I watched it though. Well, I don't know. I watched it for your bitchy remarks because I didn't actually see
them. My honest remarks, I think you meant.
This is what I always thought was really funny with the audience with that show, who ever took offence to anything you said. I liked it because I don't necessarily see bitchy comments as being a bitchy comment. I consider honesty sometimes to be really funny. And so when I'd watch what you were saying, I never thought it came from a bad place.
No, like Dicko. I remember Dicko doing a rumba. And because he was doing it for the cameras and facing away from me, he was doing these things called rumba walks.
Mm.
And it looked like his bum was eating, right? And I remember at the end of it going, Dicko, you looked like your bum was chewing caramels. And it just, I don't know where it came from, but it just stuck in my head. And Dicko brings that up. So, but you say something like that, and you know, people who love Dicko at the time, then
he deserved it, though. Think about what he said to Paulini. Said she was fat on her dress. He had it coming from what it was being said. Do me a favor and answer this question while we're talking Dancing with the Stars. Kiss, murder, marry, Daryl Summers, Daniel McPherson, Shane Bourne.
Oh, probably marry Shane Bourne. That'd be a laugh. murder Daryl Summers and kiss Daniel McPherson.
Did you work with Daryl?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All of what them. Was he like?
Great.
Okay.
The thing I liked about Daryl, he was kind of, I got friendly with Dan McPherson and I got friendly.
Oh, how friendly?
Friendly. Not enough. You know, Dan. But with Daryl, he's sort of old school, so he was a bit more in his trailer and didn't necessarily mix with us. But I grew up with Hey Hey It's Saturday, and so for me, I just loved hearing that really familiar voice every night.
Yeah.
You know, I would think, oh, my God. Oh, you know. Love it. So
who is the worst person on that show that was a dancer? God, come on, just give it to me. Just the worst person ever.
No, well, there were some shockers.
Yeah, I know, but just maybe.
But there were some great people as well who worked really hard.
If it makes it any better for you, let's start with the best person. Who was the best person ever on that show that blew you away?
I thought Tina Arena was really good. I thought Chris Barth, newsreader from Sydney, was really good.
Okay, give me the worst ones. I mean, clearly the people from
Well, Darren Hinch did I Go to Rio.
Oh, God.
On a Samba night in a white Lycra frilly sleeve.
And no one ever went to Rio again?
No, with his fly open. So that kind of stuck its sort of, that's in my memory.
You can say that one now without it making it sound bad. You're just like, that's on you, Darren.
No.
You had your fly open.
He said to me at the Melbourne Cup a couple of years ago, oh, I think the last time I saw you, I had my fly open. And I said, if I have a dollar for every man that said that to me. Oh, he was a challenge. I think David the Farmer. Remember Dave the Farmer?
Oh, yes, yes.
So he was on a reality program
He was
too.
From Big Brother.
Was he on your
No,
season?
He was not.
No, he was a challenge. Molly struggled.
What was that moment when Boy from Oz came across your way? What was that moment like when you read that?
Well, I did. I didn't say yes to The Boy from Oz when it first started. So I was doing a play. I was doing a little mini musical at the Opera House, where I really had to sing for the very first time, exposed, which wasn't my bag really at that point. And the producers came to see the show because in the middle of this show, I had to sing this song, Crawling Inside a Box and Outside a Box and Upside Down and all of that. And someone had seen it when they were putting The Boy from Oz together and said, I should go and check that guy out at the Opera House at the moment because maybe he could do that around a piano. Because I had this, like Peter Allen used to do, you know, or the piano like a rash. And so they came and saw the show and then this was to audition for the workshop of it, which was a 3-week process. They needed to find a Peter Allen and I was one of the people up for the workshop. So they actually flew me to London to do the proper audition with myself, Simon Burke and Sean Hingston, this other guy. The three of us went over there. I didn't get it. They gave it to Sean Hingston.
Oh, really?
Well, he looked a lot more like Peter Allen. He actually played the piano. He had a much, much, much better voice than me. And so they gave him the workshop. For whatever reason, that didn't work out. They did the workshop. They did some reworkings on the script. A year later, I got another phone call to come back in and re-audition for The Boy from Oz. And I'm a terrible auditioner. I don't like or I get so nervous. I stink at auditions. I stink. And I didn't want to do it. I said, look, I'm the same guy that didn't get it.
That stunk before.
Yeah, it stunk before. I only stink now. It's just older stink now. And they said, no, it didn't work out with the other guy. I want to see you again. I said, well, no, I've got the same skills. It's not for me. And I was doing a show called Crazy for You, a Gershwin musical at the time. And they asked me 3 times to come in. And I finally said, don't call me again. That's it. And then Gail Edwards, the director, rang me one day, Wednesday morning, and said, Todd, it's Gail. This is the first time I'd spoken to her. She said, what's your problem? I said, well, I'm doing quite nicely in the business at the moment. I don't know anything about The Boy from Oz. If I wasn't right last time, I don't want to put myself in a leading role position of something I'm not right for, and I don't need an extra audition experience. I don't think I want to do it. And she said, look, could you just come via the rehearsal room, the audition space, on your way to your matinee today of Crazy for You? And I walked in, and I'd put my dance bag down outside my car as I closed the car door, and it was raining, and the bottom of my bag got wet. And I got in the studio, just go and have a chat to Gail about it, kind of rolling my eyes sort of thing. Went to put my bag down, and because the bottom of it was wet, it skidded from the door of the audition room right across the middle floor, hit the piano and slid up against the wall. So it looked like I'd walked in the room and gone, yeah, what the F do you want? Threw my bag and it slid. So it looked like I had this devil may care kind of, you know, attitude of like
Diva's tantrum.
And she said, when you flung your bag across the floor, she said, I knew right there and then you were the right person for the job. I said, I didn't. It slipped out of my hands. It was all a mistake. But she thought I just had this kind of irreverent thing that Peter Allen had, and that's how I got the role.
Well, I think sometimes when you look at people's careers, it's luck, chance, and circumstance that leads you there.
Oh, always.
Like, I think when
hard work pays off. You know, being prepared pays off. Working on your craft, I never stopped doing that. That pays off. But yes, luck and circumstance play a huge part.
And then with this particular role, so you get the role, because we can't skip past this. So you get the role.
Okay, I get it. I agree to do it. Mm-hmm. And it changes my life.
How many shows did you do?
I did, 1,076 all up over two different seasons. We did 937 in the first version of it, then 10 years later did another few hundred to take it up to 1,076.
That's a lot of shows.
It's a lot of shows, but it taught me my craft. Taught me how to be honest on stage, because that's – so what I did is I then researched Peter Allen. I was already a fan. I already knew Peter Allen. I was already randomly friendly with Lynn, Peter's sister, from living in Bondi. We just met. So I was already a fan of his, but when I had to play him, I had to look at what it was about him that had back in those days had a very GP, Mr. and Mrs. General Public audience for someone who was really, you know, flamboyant.
Not that.
And you would have thought back in those days they wouldn't accept that. And that's where the honesty thing came from. So once I did so much research on him, and the family gave me videos and stuff that you just would never find these days. And I was like, what is it? What is it? What is it? And it's honesty. He had a direct beeline to the audience, and when you went and watched his shows, you would have thought at one point he looked at you, which is quite powerful when a performer on stage looks you in the eye, and that he was saying something that he's only telling you. And you know he's probably told every audience he's ever said, but he had this gift of delivering dialogue. So the dialogue in his shows was as important as the singing and as the dancing. And once I realized that, that gave me my craft, to be honest with you, because that's what I try and do now.
Well, that's, I think your name now is almost as recognisable to that musical as his own.
Like, I think I introduced Peter Allen to a lot of people who wouldn't have known Peter Allen, I think, just because I was, you know.
Did you get told at any stage that you would sort of be given or were a shoo-in to take that overseas? And then, because the Hugh Jackman thing came in, and Hugh Jackman ended up doing the role, and I think he rang you and said, am I allowed to do this or something?
He rang me to say he had he'd been asked to go and have a meeting.
Okay.
About playing the boy from Oz on Broadway, and that he didn't want to tread on my toes, and you know, wanted to let me know he'd been asked. He didn't know whether I knew, and that if I said don't go to the meeting, he wouldn't go.
Right.
Because I've been friendly with Deborah Lee for years, like before Hugh, and I know Hugh a little bit, but I was very friendly with Deborah. I hung out with Deborah Lee.
Yeah, right.
Like we were friends and still are. So I had enormous respect for him, and he was aware of that too. So he had enormous respect for me. And I didn't know, funnily enough, like the producers hadn't told me. I had a 12-month working visa for Broadway.
Thinking that's where you were going.
Yeah. So it was quite a moment in my life. I mean, I'm glad it went to Hugh, who I respect enormously. And I'm really thankful that he called me and said that. But it was a tough time because I started to get patronized by well-wishers. And that sounds awful because everyone was being really lovely, but they were patting me on the head, going, sorry, Toddy. And that's good for a minute, but then that goes on. I still get it to this day, to be honest. But you start to feel like crap after everyone's going, oh, it must be bad, terrible, 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 terrible. So suddenly you go, oh, yeah, I must feel terrible. But I don't think I actually did. I did 1,076 shows. You know, that's enough of any show. And in hindsight, which is, you know, great to look back on, I've got a daughter, Dancing with the Stars, incredible career, wonderful house and lifestyle. So, you know, I don't think I would have had that. I would have had another sort of life if I'd gone to New York. But it was just hard getting everybody talking about it.
Is it hard to live your emotions sometimes being in the public eye the way that you are?
Yes.
Because I think at certain times where...
Everyone's got an opinion about me. This is the thing that I find. This is probably... I've been single for so long.
How long have you been single for?
I've just kind of closed down. 8 years?
Get out.
9 years? Yeah.
She's a tough nut to crack?
I haven't been a nun during those 8 years. Or did I know?
Sure.
But
relationships to you have been harder to come across.
Well, I think because of my persona on Dancing with the Stars, I think people have a preconceived idea of me, of what I am and what I'm like. And I found that when celebrity hit me, which was during Dancing with the Stars, and I became aware of that, part of me closed down. Part of me went, very introverted, and I stopped going out, and it was a hard celebrity. I found celebrity awkward, and I still kind of do. I look at celebrity now as the opportunity to open doors to do what I really want to do, which is fill theatres. But I found it a bit lonely. I wasn't comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting answer, because I think most people who have come across the level of notoriety that you have, there's other things that come with that. And so whilst the everyday person walking down the street might think, oh, it'd be nice to be famous, or it might be nice to be known for things, what they don't realise is that there's an incredible loneliness that comes with it. Because
trauma success, success trauma, someone called it, because I ended up going to seeing a psychologist about it, because I was in amongst all of my friends, you know, who are as talented as me, you've got different talents and fabulous, fabulous performers and people and all that. When you step out of your group and suddenly you're doing everything that all of your friends want to do and you're getting paid an incredible amount of money for it, it's a little bit isolating. And you don't really, because you kind of want to share that with them, but you don't want to be rubbing it in their faces, but you're living this dream, and it's just like, what do you do? And I found myself very isolated. And I went to a psychologist about it, because I was like, I don't want to ring my friends and go, oh my God, it's just the most amazing night. Our audience tonight was just incredible. They all jumped at their feet and threw flowers. And I suddenly wasn't sharing any of that. I was like, oh God, it's terrible. And it was really hard. I had to get, having said that, there'll be people listening that will be going, oh, you wanker. You know, if you've had success, you shouldn't be poo-pooing it. But again, I can only say what it felt like for me. It's being famous and being successful are two completely different things.
Especially being an Australian, where there is very much a tall poppy syndrome, which means that looking at it from the aspect of, oh, yeah, sometimes Australians can be very terrible towards people who become successful, there's that. But I think it's very strange when you are that person and you are being treated sort of badly for your success.
Yeah, but the other weird thing that people can do sometimes, and this happens regularly, is that people will either pretend to know you when they don't in social circles, and you go, you know that we don't know each other. Like, we met at Marsha Hines' house in 1987, but once. We don't know each other. But here they are, and what they then can sometimes do is they can sort of start talking down to you in front of their friends, because it's like they're saying, look how I can talk to Todd. It's a weird thing that – and it doesn't just happen sometimes. It happens quite often. Someone will go, oh, you dirty bitch. And you think, no, I don't want you to talk to me like I'm a dirty
bitch.
You don't
know me well enough to say that.
Yeah, we met once in 1987. I don't like that. But if I come back to that person as a celebrity and say, can you just mind your manners? You watch. It'll be a big spray on social media of what an asshole I am. So you've got to be careful. There's that stuff is out there, as well as...
it's going to play with your mind.
Yes, but as well as the fabulous flowers on opening nights and the audiences that flock to the theatre and all the other things which you want. There's two sides to it.
How did this Rocky Horror Picture Show come about? Because I know Craig left the production. I don't really want to get into that, because, like, I don't know enough about it. And I always feel like if you don't know enough about something, then don't go there.
I agree.
But I felt with Craig's exit of this show and there being some scrutiny over, you know, what had happened, my impression of theatre, because very limited theatre I had, was, God, they're a bawdy sexual bunch behind closed doors. And that to me was musical theatre, was that behind musical theatre, there's kind of a bit of a sexy, bawdy crowd. With what's happened with Craig McLaughlin, do you think that that's sort of now drawn a line in the sand and you have to be very careful about what happens behind stage?
Oh, it's not just behind stage. I mean, it's every business. I mean, we're now doing bullying workshops.
Yeah, right.
It's just the sign of the times. It's the times we live in. In every sector of the community, there can be harassment. The difference in theatre is that we spend a lot of time in our underwear together as a group backstage changing to go on and do a scene. So there's an alleyway behind the stage called the crossover, which is where you live once the show starts. So from the time the overture starts to the time you take your last bow, you all stand backstage. And if you've got 20 costume changes in a show, then you're in your undies a lot back there for a lot of the time. That's the only difference. An unwanted sexual advance is an unwanted sexual advance, whether you work in the Westpac Bank or whether you work in Rocky Horror. And you just need to know what they are. I mean, I've been in the business 35 years. Not once have I sexually harassed or been accused of any sexual harassment. It's just how some people don't have that filter. And that's in every sector of the community. We're not a bawdy bunch. We're just extroverts. You know, to go on stage every night, you've got to be pretty free with yourself, because you're walking on stage
Did you end up speaking to Craig at all before doing the show?
I don't know Craig.
So you've never actually... Have you never met him before?
I don't think so. No. Maybe once back in the day.
I was always curious because I was thinking, just personally because I'm, I don't know, nosy, I guess. I was always thinking, I wonder whether or not you just picked up the phone and was like, I've got to take this role. But I guess if you don't know that person, why would you do that?
Well, I was approached to play the role back in 2014 when Craig got it. And so, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't even go to the, I had to sing for Richard O'Brien and I was doing.
You had another gig.
I had another gig. So I couldn't actually go and do it. So I just walked away from it. So it's a role I've always wanted to do. I don't know anything about the Craig thing except for what I've read in the paper. So I'm like you. I don't talk about it.
Why get involved? Yeah.
It's playing out how it will play out. And it's none of my business. What my business is to just deliver the product that I've been employed to do at the moment. But I look at the producer's point of view. So a lot of people going, do we close Rocky down? You know, what are we doing? The producer's really in a hard place because if they go, right, this brand is now tarnished, we have to close it down. Well, then you've got all the other people that aren't involved in this situation. The mechs, the crew, the theatre workers, the cast, the orchestra, they're all suddenly, there goes 4 months' work. That's what made me step in and go, yeah, I will take it. I know there was, I feel an incredible amount of pressure on me, a bit more because of the Craig situation, but I don't buy into it. And I'm just out there, like I go back to saying I run my own race. I'm running my own race every night at the match.
I think it's called the Roseanne syndrome now, which is that she was like basically, she lost a lot of people, a lot of jobs. She lost a lot of people, a lot of money. But then, you know, do you throw the show Roseanne at or do you make the Connors, which is now what they're going ahead with? You know, they're making a show. And I think for you, there's something really beautiful in what you said, which was that I think you decided to take this job because you recognized that you were going to save a lot of jobs.
Well, I think the producers recognised that themselves. Mm. Like, well, you know, we're going to put all these people out of work. It wasn't necessarily a money decision. It was like, and also, the Rocky Horror brand is very strong worldwide. And I think once you have a chink in that armour, I think any mother whose child is, you know, failing or hurt in some way, your instincts are to fix it. And I presume that's what Richard O'Brien, who wrote it, went, right, we need to fix this somehow. And so in I come. Love it. The cast were, because I don't know any of these casts. I knew Shane Jacobson. They just welcomed me with open arms. They were like, come on, Toddy, get in here. There's your shoes. This is where I touch you here. This is where I do. This is where the audience are going to love you in this bit. And so they just welcomed me with open arms.
Toddy, you're in your element doing
yes,
this.
I am.
There's a couple of moments.
This is one of the most favourite things I've ever done in my life. And it's come to me at 53.
Well, that's why you look at people's careers and you think, you know, boy from Oz or whatever, and sometimes people try and pigeonhole you to define something, which I never like doing to people who work in any industry because there's still so much more to come. Like, you know, we could have this conversation in 10 years' time, and I think the beautiful thing about that is you could be finding another role that defines who you are.
Todd the Musical.
Yeah. The one which is you as a kid dancing with the
Prince
of Water.
Wait till you see me as an 8-year-old. Oh, my God.
I could only imagine. And then I need to ask you about how you became a father because so this relationship obviously that you had with a friend of yours who I think you'd been in a show with her, hadn't you? With Anne?
Yes, we did Cats together in 1987.
And then how did she approach this? Like did you both...
I approached her.
So you wanted to have a child and you approached her.
So Anne and I just did discuss it way back in the day. We were best friends. And we said, look, if we ever, you know, later on in life, I think over a couple of Shirazes one night, you know, we think we want to have a baby and we don't have partners or whatever, we should think about it. Well, that was when we were 21.
Yeah.
And so it was just my 40th birthday and I was lying at home. And I just felt content and settled and, you know, had success. And I just rang her and said, do you remember that, you know, that conversation we had? And she went, yes, I do. I said, well, this is the phone call. I probably can't make it again because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
So that's this.
And then it worked out.
The journey started, yeah.
What's it like being a dad?
Fabulous. Scary. Loving. I just can't believe I am one.
Is it the hardest role you've ever taken?
No, it's not. Well, Anne's the primary carer, so I come in for the good bits, you know. But no. I'm definitely dad and supportive and yes, I'm dad. No, it's not the hardest thing. It's just different. I just can't believe it. I just really didn't ever think I'd have a daughter, let alone a beautiful little 11-year-old who looks like me and cheeky and naughty, appropriately naughty, and a deep thinker and a worrier. See, I see that in her, and I'm very aware of, like, when she was little, we played this game on the swings where she swung and I pretended that she hit me and all that. And like 6 months after we played that game, she went, "Daddy, I'm so sorry that I hit you that day on the swings." And I went, "Oh no, you've got my worrying genes."
She's held on to it.
She held on to it for months, you know.
I think because you can work certain things out about who you are as a person, sometimes it's nice. I think that's almost an experience that you get to be the father and look at some of those traits.
Well, she did say to me, which I think is great, and Anne's done a brilliant job bringing her up. She did say to me one day, and when I was doing Greece, and I wore quite heavy makeup in Greece because I played Teen Angel and I was dressed like Liberace and I needed heavy makeup. She was in my dressing room and she was watching Frozen on the computer while I was getting my face on. And she turned around and she looked at me for the first time in makeup and she went, "Oh, what the?" And she went, "Daddy, can't you just wear normal makeup?" And I thought, good on you, kid. You know, how many daughters get to say that to their dads?
She gets to be cheeky and you get to appreciate that, yeah, I think.
Can't you just wear normal makeup? The other day I Skyped with my full Frankenfurter face on.
What did she think of that?
She went, "What?" And I said, "What do you think?" She went, "Love it."
Was there a lot of pressure during the marriage equality debate? Do you feel, being a gay man, that you felt like you had to be an LGBT?
A spokesperson for it, yes. And I didn't necessarily enjoy that. I come from a broken family, and my question is about marriage in general. I don't know that I'm a fan of marriage in general, and it was not whether you're gay or straight or whatever. I mean, I don't like being told I can't get married. I don't like being told I can't do anything, to be honest. The best way to get me to do something is tell me not to do it. And I felt like that about gay marriage. I didn't want somebody telling me I couldn't, but I don't think I would ever get married anyway, to be honest.
You never know.
It's just not my thing. You never know, but I'm...
But it was more about...
So. It'd only be for the gifts if I did. And just so I could see my dogs dress up walking down the aisle with the rings attached to their back. Something
so
like
you've
that.
Thought about it?
No, yeah. I think I saw that on Will and Grace or something.
Yeah, I've actually been to a few weddings that weren't gay, where the dogs were the best man.
Yeah,
totally. So it's actually quite cute.
But I don't know. No, but I did. I had a lot of... When the referendum first reared its head, yes, I got caught up by every media agency in the land, and I never spoke. The only people I spoke to about it was Kyle and Jackie O, because they wanted me to debate their 19-year-old Christian producer who didn't agree with it but said he likes gay people but just didn't agree with gay marriage. And so I did go in and debate that with him, and the reason he didn't agree with gay marriage is because, quote, it was written in Genesis.
Who was that? Kyle's producer at what age?
I can't remember. 19.
Oh.
It was written in Genesis. I said, but so if you... Oh, it was, got me going.
Yeah.
Anyway, my debate with him, my angle on the debate was...
Abbreviate it, give it to me.
Look, my angle on the debate with him was, okay, so you're okay about gay people. I get that, and thank you for that. But so... It would be were you getting married, would that be one of the happiest days of your life? And he said, yes. I said, so you'd like yourself to be ultimately happy, but you just don't want the same for me. Is that right? He went, well, kind of. I said, well, would you be happy for a gay person to do your cake? Would you be happy for a gay person to do the flowers?
Yeah.
Would you be happy for a gay person to do the wedding dress? He said, yeah. I said, oh, okay. So you're happy to let all these gay people make you ultimately happy, but you just don't want them to be ultimately happy themselves.
What did he say to that?
I lost the debate.
What?
Yeah, because of Kyle and Jackie O's audience, who are pretty conservative young people, apparently. Go figure.
What year was that, though?
Well, when it first all, I don't know.
It started kicking off.
2 years ago. But that was the only time I spoke about it. I don't want to be a spokesperson for any group. I want people to just live their own lives and you know, I love public speaking, clearly, but I don't want to ever speak for you.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to speak for me, to be honest.
Well, I just think it's an interesting thing because I notice with a lot of prolific people. Yeah, look, I don't think that's lost. I don't think the message is lost there because I think for a lot of people, the reason why marriage equality happened was because I think we did start debating equality, not marriage. And so
it became... Yes, I totally agree with that.
More down the line with that.
It's a very proud time to be gay.
Oh, yeah.
The lengths we have gone to in the last few years, the momentum that we have gathered as a community in the last few years has just been ginormous and great. It's so good. I mean, I'm walking around, I know it's only a little thing, with painted nails, right? The most blokey people have come up and asked me about them. Not one person has made me feel like I'm some, you know, freak. But that wouldn't have been the case probably even 10 years ago, I think people would have been shy. The only people were these conservative ladies when I was getting them done.
Just when you're in the nail salon.
Yeah. But no, I just think it's a great time to be gay. And I think we'll only get more powerful.
Those ladies are just being really competitive. They were like worried that your nails are going to be better than theirs.
Yeah, they are.
That's and they are.
She's
they not,
are.
Because and she's like, not shy about saying
she
it.
She was getting this pucey pink colour and I'm getting sparkles.
She's just jealous that she can't walk down the street with that. What is next for you after doing Rocky Horror?
Oh, what's next for me? I'm taking 6 months off. I've rented a little shack on the Hawkesbury River and bought a boat at the end of last year, a little fanger, and it's water access only, so I'm turning off for 6 months. I've got a Bravo cruise to do, an entertainment cruise to do. I've got a role in a little independent movie, which I can't... Oh, quite a big role in an independent movie. Which, because I sign, I'm Auslan fluent, so and this involves my signing, so I've got that to do. But I'm basically from October to March chilling out, and then I do another musical here in Melbourne, which I can't tell you what it is, at the Comedy Theatre from April.
But that's going to be a good one.
It'll be big. Yeah, I've got to learn some skills I don't have at the moment.
What are those skills? Because that'll be a tip into what it is. You're not even going to tell me that?
We'll totally give it away.
Tell we're mates now.
No, we're not.
No,
you're
we're
one of those people.
I met him once at a party.
87, Marsha Hindhouse.
Marsha Hindhouse. What a dag. Have you got a message for the queer community that would be listening to this right now?
Yeah, be yourself. I mean, Oscar Wilde said it best, be yourself, everybody else is taken. Just be yourself. It doesn't matter, not just about being gay, but just be yourself. Stop looking at other people. Stop being envious of other people. Stop competing with other people's success. Just build your own.
Tom McKenney, thank you so much for joining us on Word for Word.
That feels like a therapy session.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.